Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. It's the 1st of June and summer is just around the corner. U.S. equities haven't waited for summer to heat up as the S&P 500 just completed its ninth straight positive week. Yet this is also bringing concern that this rally is overdone and at risk of a pullback. So joining me on this Monday morning to discuss this market rally, its drivers, and the investment outlook from here, glad to welcome back for the CIO Strategy Snapshot, Jason Dreho, Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas from the UBS Chief Investment Office. Jason, good morning. Glad to be back with you, and thank you for dropping by to spend some time today with our listeners.
Morning, Dan. Happy Monday.
So, Jason, I just mentioned that the S&P 500 has been up for nine straight weeks, but there's more to the recent market performance than that. So what would you point to that's noteworthy about this performance?
We'll just pick up on that comment about the S&P being up nine straight weeks. This is only the third time since 1990 that's happened. So it's a pretty unusual stretch, but it tells you just like how sort of resilient and fast and rapid this rally has been. That continued last week. The S&P was up about 1.4%. But there's also signs of sort of broadening out of the rally. We saw some early cyclical stocks do well. The Russell 2000 small cap index was up 1.9%, so it indicated some more broadening out of overall performance. But it was still kind of the tech sector, tech plus kind of broadly defined. That was the outperformer last week, with the NASDAQ up almost 3%, the outperformer. One of the hallmarks of this rally for the past 2 months has been it's been fairly concentrated. Just to give some context, over the past month, so basically in the month of May, if we looked at the S&P 500 constituents, only 27% of them actually outperformed the index. That's a pretty kind of low percentile. If you go back the last 20 years since 2005, that will put in the fifth percentile. And it really is so narrow, a rally, very strong sort of momentum, kind of driven dynamic. Again, since the end of March, momentum as a sort of factor in the market, it's up by some estimates like 30-35% in the past couple of months. If you step back and think about, now that kind of summer is effectively here, also the second half of the year is now only 30 days away, just sort of putting in context what sort of happened of late, 3 months ago, there was no war in Iran. We've now had 3 months of the situation. But over those 3 months, the S&P 500 is up 10%. The NASDAQ is up, 21%. Tech is up, 21%. And that's half of that performance has just come in the past in the month of May. So, it's just from the markets have sort of shrugged it off, continue to kind of grind higher. It really has been sort of a tech story. Semiconductors are up almost 80% just in the past 2 months. So it's a very kind of, concentrated market, but a very solid market overall. That's the equity story. If we pivot over to the fixed income segment and look at interest rates in particular, over the past 3 months, rates have gone higher across the entire Treasury curve, anywhere from 36 basis points up to 63 basis points, more so at the front of the curve. Like the rise has been more predominant at the front end of the curve, and that reflects the market pricing for Fed. Cuts have pivoted to hikes. Into February, the market was pricing for around 2.5 rate cuts this year. As of last Friday, the market was now pricing in no cuts and about a 95% chance of a hike by April of 2027. So pretty big shift there. If you look, in the move higher in rates over the past 3 months, it's primarily due to higher real rates, whereas break-even inflation expectations, have gone up a little bit, but they've actually gone down over the last month. And so that, again, reflects the market shifting on Fed rate expectations. Higher Fed funds rate implies a higher kind of real rate across the board. And then just looking at other kind of asset classes, obviously oil has gone up a lot, but last week, fell on the possibility of a sustained ceasefire. The U.S. dollar has rallied. It has come off its highs a little bit over the past a month, but definitely kind of from where we were 3 months ago, it's higher overall. So if you just kind of look at the performance in the past few months, strong performance for equities led by tech. Bonds are down, but it's also reflecting shifting dynamics for inflation and growth. So if you kind of told me about the rate story it'd be surprising to see the S&P 500 up 9 straight weeks. But again, it sort of reflects, I think, ultimately sort of good fundamentals.
Okay, now that oversegs to what exactly caused it. However, what are the primary factors, Jason, that have been driving the markets?
Well, as of recently, really for the past 2 months, it's been expectations, hope, communication, however you want to put it, of the possibility of some sort of sustained ceasefire deal between the U.S. and Iran. And last week was no different. A week ago, there were reports that the U.S. and Iran were close to signing a memorandum of understanding that would open up the Strait of Hormuz relatively soon. That has continued to drag on, and as of early Monday morning, there's talks of no negotiations until certain conditions are met. But I think the big picture story is that what we've seen is a kind of willingness to negotiate, a willingness to sort of reach some sort of deal that would take off, let's call it the tail risks of much higher oil prices, much higher inflation, much higher rates. And that's kind of the significant thing. So while this may linger on, I think the worst case scenarios of the likelihood of that have come down quite a bit. So that is kind of one factor. But the other kind of major factor is, or two factors really, are on the kind of earnings and economic fundamentals, and then a lot of that is tied to kind of the AI theme. U.S. growth has been relatively resilient, in despite the fact that there's been an oil price interest rate shock. Q1 GDP was kind of revised down to 1.6%, but still relatively solid. So far, now 2 months into the second quarter, the consensus forecast among economists is that we get growth around 2.1% in the second quarter. Data that we have on consumer spending, at least through April, continues to show resilience. Higher frequency data on credit card spending suggests, again, consumers continue to spend relatively well. The labor market, after softening much of last year, definitely exhibited signs of stabilization, with job growth kind of now averaging about 50,000 per month for the last 3 months. So kind of stabilization, resiliency of the economy. AI CapEx spending is a key part of that. It drove a lot of Q1 growth, and it looks like it will continue in the second quarter as well. If we then pivot to earnings as a fundamental driver, Q1 earnings season is largely done. What we have that is, once you strip out some kind of one-time items that were kind of reflect of some profits from existing positions, earnings growth or EPS growth for the S&P 500 is close to 20%. Also significant is that the guidance for Q2 and kind of going forward has not really come down significantly. So that has helped lift equities. Even though the S&P is up about 12% year-to-date, its actual P multiple has come down about 5% because earnings growth on a forward-looking basis have actually gone up about 5 percentage points. So that is really going to get to the fundamental story. That is, a lot of it is AI-related. A lot of it's related to the CapEx story. But when we kind of look at what's happened so far this year, it's sort of the overall takeaway is that the U.S. economy has been resilient. AI has been a key driver for that. It's become so significant in terms of investment that it is helping to drive the economy. It's definitely cascading through corporate earnings. That ultimately is what matters most for the stock market. And some of the risks that seemed very prevalent at the start of the quarter have come down significantly, at least in terms of oil prices shooting up to $150 a barrel. And therefore, inflation and rates kind of follow in that path. So that's really kind of the key drivers of explaining the performance we've seen thus far this year.
So, Jason, at this point, we covered how market performance has played out over the past few months. However, where do we go from here? What would you say are the factors, Jason, that you think are most relevant for the markets?
Well, the first thing is to actually get some sort of memorandum of understanding signed and agreed to by the U.S. and Iran. And the details sort of kind of being clear. The market's been certainly willing to look through near-term volatility with the expectation that some sort of deal would be done and allows the Strait of Hormuz to open up, start to open up before the end of the second quarter. Now, that's only 30 days away, so the time or the clock is ticking for that to happen. So it seems some sort of progress or clear sort of developments in the next couple of weeks, but I think it's kind of necessary for the markets to become comfortable and continue to move higher. So that's one thing. If it does not materialize, the debt set up, at least in a near-term scope for disappointment. But I'd point out that anytime the markets have sold off even a little bit on concerns that this is not being resolved, you've had investors willing to kind of step in and sort of buy that dip. So there's a lot of, essentially cash that could be put to work. So some real significant breakdown in discussions, negotiations, or escalation in the conflict would be required to derail the general trend, higher for equities. So that's one factor that would sort of to focus on the near term. Another is more economic data. So June 1st, you know, this sort of marks the beginning of when we will get May data, starting today with the ISM index, manufacturing index. But on Friday, June 5th, we will get the May jobs report. The consensus right now is for about 85,000 new jobs created. I mentioned a few minutes ago that the last 3 months, the average for that is job creation is around 49,000. So let's say 50,000 to round it off. So an 85,000 will suggest further signs that the labor market is holding up. Concerns about softness there, weakness is not sort of actually manifested in the data. The other thing to sort of watch for, at least in the coming weeks, is what does the Fed do? In particular, on the 17th of June, the Fed will announce its decision on, on rates, which almost certainly is standing pat. They have a chance to update their kind of a statement, and this is also will be the first time that Kevin Warsh, as the Fed chair, will have his first press conference. Markets often test new Fed chairs to about their inflation fighting credibility. So what the Fed does, what Warsh says, what their statement entails, if it is more of a balanced view, that could be, create some uncertainty volatility for the markets overall. Now, it's important to note that the market pricing for the Fed has shifted significantly over the past few months from 2.5 cuts at the end of February. Now it's pricing in about a 95% chance of a hike by next April. That pricing for a hike has actually come down. 10 days ago, it was close to 1.5 hikes, priced by the April of next year. So it's kind of reflecting a little bit easier concerns about, oil going higher, inflation perhaps not being as sticky as some investors were fearing. Our view is that ultimately the Fed will cut, starting in December and then again in March. The key thing is that, relative to market expectations, which is pricing and a hike, we think the bar is quite high for the Fed to hike. It's much more likely the Fed's next move is a cut, and they will begin cutting within the next 12 months. So we're saying December, but that timing certainly could change. It could be a little bit later than that, but that's the direction. That's certainly, I think a key thing that if there really is not just a shift where the Fed is saying we're more balanced in our outlook, putting a hike as a possibility, which I think that's the market's already expecting that. But if there's a clear pivot towards the Fed actually expecting hikes, then that would be a headwind for the markets. So even though the market is pricing for hikes, I think the general investor view is that that's unlikely to happen at this point in time. So these are the key things to watch for. Deal, the terms to deal with between the U.S. and Iran in the near term, some of the economic data validating this kind of ongoing sort of resiliency, and then, what sort of communication do you get from the Fed that, with the risk that the markets could be spooked if they don't sound either too hawkish or not hawkish enough.
Let's wrap up by covering positioning. How should investors be approaching asset allocation right now, Jason?
Well, if we take a medium-term view, at least through year-end and over the next 12 months, we remain, constructive on equities. For some context, we have a 70-100 price target on the S&P by December, 8,200 by next June. So that implies close to 10% total return between now and a year from now in equities. So constructive overall. I mentioned before that the breadth has been very narrow. Historically, when you get that, oftentimes you then have a situation where you have sort of a broadening out of performance. It tends to sort of mean revert from very, very low levels. So that supports kind of one of the key messages we have, which is sort of diversify across equities. If you're concentrated in large cap kind of growth stocks, the Mag 7, some of the semiconductors that have done very well, this is a good opportunity to sort of to broaden out from that exposure. Just wasn't one example. Software has been underperformer for the full year. It was hit back in February with concerns about AI disrupting sort of the software, software as a service business model. But since the end of March, software is up 28%, and just last week it was up 8.5%. So again, sort of broadening out from some of the winners that have been very prominent for the past couple of years, but also the past couple of months, because there are opportunities within the U.S. and abroad. So kind of diversifying across equities, within the U.S. that includes things like consumer discretionary, which is a sector that has been somewhat unloved, concerned about the health of the consumer, about the slowing economy. And if we get a deal, if inflation starts to come down, real wage growth can start to pick up. We expect that sector to kind of benefit. Pivoting over to fixed income, general preference is to remain high up in quality of fixed income overall. Given the move in rates and some of the volatility there, we've been sort of cautious on extending duration too far. Given the move higher in rates, you know, we've kind of recommended more of the belly of the treasury curve, meaning like, you know, maturity structures of like 5 to 7 years, as opposed to before it was kind of 3 to 5 years, but not, you know, extending duration too long, because, you know, the 10-year could easily back up to 4.7% very quickly after sort of rallying. You know, tying in with that, the kind of overall view of higher quality, we do like taxable munis as another way to play this idea. The yields or tax equivalent yields are attractive relative to, you know, investment grade corporate bonds, and even to some extent, you know, higher quality securitized credit, which we like as well. And then finally, just on commodities, you know, we've seen commodities, you know, do quite well. Gold has been, you know, hit a little bit recently because of higher rates, but ultimately as a medium term sort of diversifier against concerns about ongoing geopolitical tensions, concerns about Fed's independence, and that will be tested, you know, in the coming, you know, couple of months, that the there's upside, you know, again, we see in gold specifically as a sort of diversifier, but also sort of commodities in general as, you know, for geopolitical reasons, you know, the demand for secure supply chains, secure energy sources, and secure materials in general suggests that there's a fundamental structural tailwind for commodities that can add diversification to your portfolio.
Well, Jason, appreciate your market insights and positioning guidance. Always helpful to begin the trading week, and do look forward to picking back up with our conversation again next Monday.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient, and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.